Okay, what's the number one reason you should try Instacart? Shopping over 1.5 million unique products from over 1,000 retailers and get everything delivered right to your door in as fast as 1 hour, all in one app. So you can spend more time with the ones who matter most. Visit instacart.com to get free delivery on your first three orders. Offer valid for a limited time. $10 minimum per order. Additional terms apply.
Live from the palatial yet not overly ostentatious studios of CBS Sports Radio here in beautiful New York City, sitting on top of the 10th floor of 345 Hudson Street. Welcome on in to a Tuesday edition of the Zach Gelb Show across all of our great local CBS Sports Radio affiliates, Sirius XM, Channel 158, and that free Odyssey app. 855-212-4CBS is the number to jump on in. 855-212-4227. You could always get at me on Instagram, where I'm straight flexing, or via the good old cesspool of Twitter, at Zach Gelb. That's Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. Loaded guest list for you coming up 20 minutes from now. Fresh off the call last night, as Jimmy Butler was Jimmy Buckets with 56 points and 9 rebounds as the Heat take a commanding 3-1 lead in that series up against the Bucks, which is a stunner, as Miami got the 119-114 victory last night. The man that was on the call is the legendary Kevin Harlan, will join us 20 minutes from now. We will also have to chat some Milwaukee Bucks, and in addition to that, the Aaron Rodgers divorce with the Green Bay Packers winding up in New York, and we have the details of the trade that did come out yesterday. I'm going to go to two guys that are big-time Packers fans and also big-time Bucks fans and two of my favorites in the business. We'll have them all at the same time at the top of the hour in Bart Winkler and Ryan Horvat. And then at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, we head out to Kansas City tomorrow for the NFL Draft. We will do our live show Wednesday preview from 6 to 10 p.m. Eastern. We'll do the live draft show covered starting at 6 p.m. Eastern on CBS Sports Radio with myself, Andrew Perloff, and JR from the JR Sport Brief Extravaganza. And then on Friday will be JR and yours truly doing a 6 to 10 p.m. Eastern time show. So with the draft literally right around the corner, we'll go to a former number one overall pick. He got drafted 20 years ago, and that is Carson Palmer, who will join us in studio. So a whole lot to do today. But first up, producing this extravaganza for the next 4 hours is no other than Hot Take Hickey.
Hot Take Hickey.
Okay. Last night was probably my favorite night of the early postseason so far on the hardwood, because that was a tremendous back-to-back sequence with the Miami Heat finding a way to take down the Bucks, and then LeBron James. Let me just say this. Great job out of LeBron James. Because I think Bum Brooks, Dylan Brooks, is insufferable, and this guy is just a flat-out clown. That's what Dylan Brooks is. You run your mouth, and you were biting off more than you could chew, taking a shot at one of the greatest players of all time, saying you don't respect him until he drops 40 against you. Like, who the heck are you, Dylan Brooks? I want to have confidence, but who the heck are you to not have respect towards LeBron James? And then when things don't go your way, wah, I'm not talking to the media. What a crybaby. Oh, my goodness gracious. Bum Brooks, Big Baby Brooks, all the above. Like, this guy is just a joke. And now he's saying the reason he got ejected is because the media made him a villain? And he also didn't talk last night? Yeah, I'm good. So you're willing to talk, and you're willing to talk a big game, but then when things don't go your way, you're nowhere to be found. And I say this all the time. Being someone that has a platform, being someone that has a microphone in front of my big fat face 5 days a week, if you are going to say something and you're going to predict something, have that same energy when something doesn't go your way. Because that's what I actually respect people in the media or in sports. If you're going to make a big, bold claim, and if you're going to take a big shot and you take a swing and not only miss, but you whiff in a big way, you got to face the music. And Dylan Brooks, what I've learned about Dylan Brooks, he's not willing to face the music. And it's gutless. So I loved that last night in that back and forth game, because for a while, I thought the Lakers were going to win and win big. And then late in that game, it's back and forth. and LeBron's driving him, gets the shot to fall, which was not an easy layup, and then in overtime, gets that play right over Dylan Brooks, and you could tell LeBron was feeling it. Because I wish LeBron would be a little bit more transparent, but when you are the quote-unquote king, and someone tries to get on your throne, or someone tries to tug on your cape, it's probably best that you don't even acknowledge people that are so beneath you. But there is a part of me that would just love if LeBron would acknowledge Dylan Brooks' shortcomings even more. But LeBron knows that's beneath him. But you could tell that what Dylan Brooks said, LeBron thought it was extremely disrespectful with the way that he was celebrating late in that game when he had the shot and the layup over Dylan Brooks. And I love the emotion from LeBron James. And I know LeBron, for the most part in the game, like if you were saying, oh, vintage LeBron game or great LeBron game, you would expect him, ironically, to have 35, 40 points, 45 points, whatever it was. But the way that he took over that game late and the way that he was dominant on the glass and had 22 points, 20 rebounds, and 7 assists, that's what makes LeBron, at the age of 38, there's a reason why he's in a category that is the elite of the elite. Because he could dominate a game in so many different facets of a contest. And this series, it's over. Like, quite frankly, this series was over when Dylan Brooks opened up his big fat mouth. Because you knew LeBron was going to shut up the Grizzlies. And more importantly, not only the Grizzlies, shut up Dylan Brooks. And that's what LeBron has done. There is a 0% chance that the Los Angeles Lakers are going to blow a 3-1 series lead. And quite frankly, I think the conversation starts to develop. What are the Lakers going to do the rest of the postseason? Because you take a glance, most, this series is going to go to 6 games. I would think it's probably over in game 5, but you never know from night to night in the association. But they're going to get the winner of the Kings Golden State series, where we don't know how healthy De'Aaron Fox is going to be able to be with the finger injury, if it is Sacramento. And also, if you're Golden State, I get it. They've been a dynasty. They've won from every way. They are not a great road team this year. In the regular season, only had 11 road wins. But Golden State is always going to be a tough out. We know the NBA wants LeBron up against Steph. We know that's what Spineless Silver, Adam Silver, is begging for, is a LeBron James-Steph Curry second-round matchup. But the Lakers, who could use rest, because we know Anthony Davis is 100%. We know LeBron, even though he's magnificent last night, dealt with injuries this year, is 38 years old. They're going to get some rest, assuming they take care of business, and probably Sacramento Golden State has the feel as if it's going to be a 7-game series, where, in all likelihood, Lakers and Memphis is over in game 5. So the Lakers are going to be rested, and the Lakers, as long as they're healthy, they're dangerous. And I didn't think I'd be saying this headed into the postseason. Headed into the postseason, I said, at best, the Los Angeles Lakers probably win 1 series. That's at best. And I'm talking about once you actually get into the tournament, not this play-in nonsense, which they were in. But at best, I thought the apex of the Lakers is, all right, you win 1 series. Just because all throughout the year, we've been expecting the Lakers to do something, and the Lakers really haven't delivered. But the Lakers are starting to form together and gel together at the right time. And you just look at the game last night, you know, Reeves continues to be really good for that team. Anthony Davis was good late, even though that wasn't his best performance. You know, Rui's been a good player for them. Schroeder could get hot. Like, they got some players on this team. Don't get me wrong. Russell Salah, I know he fouled out last night. Like, don't get me wrong. This is not a great Lakers team. But we're now in a league where, I guess you could say outside of the Suns, there's not really a super team. And you could debate that on the Suns, but the Suns got to the finals and added KD. So for the most part, this is still dynamic duos. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you that the Lakers can't beat the Golden State Warriors. I'm not going to sit here and tell you the Lakers can't beat Sacramento. And we got to see how the health of both those teams are and how long that series plays out. So it's not far-fetched to say that the Lakers can go to the Western Conference Finals. And then in all likelihood, you're getting the winner, if you are in the Western Conference Finals, of Denver and Phoenix. And right now, even though both those series are at 3-1, I would give the edge to Denver over Phoenix because Denver's looked a lot better in their series in 3-1. And I've been impressed with the way that Jamal Murray's been able to come back in what you could say is the early big moments for the Suns. The Clippers are the walking wounded with George out, with also Kawhi Leonard being out, and Russell Westbrook. I got to tip my cap to him, the guy that Hickey said that bleeping guy about. He's played well in the playoffs. Now, I got to give credit to Russell Westbrook for the way that he's played, but the Suns, they've had to play a lot of minutes, and they have not been that impressive as a 3-1 series lead would indicate. So I'm not telling you the Lakers are going to the finals, but the way that I move the apex for them has gone up. We're heading into the postseason. I said at best one series. Now it would not shock me whatsoever if they're in the Western Conference Finals. Now, talking about shocking, what we saw last night from the Miami Heat was just magnificent. And I did not think heading into this series that the Bucks, you know, the Heat would always be tough because the Heat with Jimmy Butler, even though the record does not indicate what they usually are, we know the Heat are a good basketball team. But for the Miami Heat to be one win away and for this to be 3-1 is bonkers. And I know Giannis has been dealing with the injuries. He missed game two, missed game three, or missed game three, missed game four. Came back last night for game four, if I get that right. Sorry, because the series is 3-1. And Giannis comes back last night after missing two and three, and he gives you a triple-double. Like, if I would have told you heading into that game last night that Giannis Antetokounmpo would have had a triple-double, 26 points, 13 assists, 10 rebounds, and Brooke Lopez would give you 36 points and 11, you would say, with all due respect to the Miami Heat, how many points did the Bucks win by? That's what you would have said. Instead, the Heat have this ridiculous comeback where Milwaukee led the entire way, and at home, the Heat beat the Bucks to send this back to Fiserv Forum with a 3-1 series lead. And Jimmy Butler is just a dog. That's what Jimmy Butler is. 56 points and 9 rebounds. The second leading scorer for the Miami Heat was Martin with 12, one of the Martin twins. And yet, he had 12 and Bam had 15. But Bam did not play that great in the contest last night. You almost like forget about him. So you take a look at that and you see what Jimmy Butler did. That was Jimmy Butler just being an assassin last night. And the Miami Heat are now one win away from going to the second round, where in all likelihood, because I don't think the Knicks are blowing their 3-1 lead, they're going to be going up against the New York Knicks. And Philadelphia, I don't believe in Philadelphia going to the NBA Finals. I don't believe Philadelphia gets to the conference finals. And there's more and more pressure that grows on Boston. Because even though we sometimes think the NBA is very predictable, you look at the Eastern Conference. If I would have put a poll out there, who's going to be the Eastern Conference final teams? Everyone would have said it was going to be Boston, it was going to be Milwaukee. I don't think Milwaukee's coming on back. I know Milwaukee a few years ago was down 0-2 to the Suns. They end up winning an NBA Finals. But all Jimmy Butler has to do, who is a really good postseason player, you can even say a great postseason player, and he doesn't have a ring. But what he continues to do, he continues to win with less. That's what Jimmy Butler does. And at most, you get three shots. I don't see how Jimmy Butler, in three opportunities, even though I have all the respect in the world for the Bucks, doesn't find a way to get one win. So think about the landscape here of the NBA postseason. The Suns not looking too hot, but they're going to survive in advance. The Nuggets have impressed with Jamal Murray being the complimentary piece to the Joker. Sacramento Golden State's going to be a dogfight. The Lakers are going to be in the second round. And in the East, assuming the Knicks hold on, the Cavs are going home, and the Knicks, who tried to get Donovan Mitchell and then weren't going to give up what the Cavs were, are going to send the Cavs home. The Heat most likely going to send the Bucks home. Philadelphia's already through, and Boston's going to be through. So as we continue this push to the finals, like right now, if you ask me, I would probably say it's Boston and Denver. But a team like Miami is going to be a tough out, and they're going to be a pain in the ass. And Boston knows that better than anybody. And you look at the Lakers with LeBron, it's going to take all you can to take LeBron James down. So this is going to be a crazy rest of the postseason if how we think this is going to hold does hold in the first round. Hickey, last night was just a phenomenal night with the Butler comeback and what LeBron was able to do. It was really fun to watch. Let me just simply ask you this, because I do think the Lakers can now make the Western Conference Final. And when you look at the Heat, I would assume that everyone's going to pick them, even though they're the 8 seed, if they go up against the Knicks, who are a 5 seed. How far do you think the Heat and the Lakers can go with the way that you evaluate things? Go ahead.
Ooh, I would say for the Heat, I do think the Knicks would give them a hard time. I think the Knicks would win that series. So I think
they'll win the series.
Yeah, I don't think it's surprising.
Well, I think both those teams are extremely scrappy. We know that. And I love what the Knicks are doing with Brunson and Josh Hart. I would just, even though it's a tricky game, I just trust the best player in that series, and that's Jimmy Butler.
That's fair. I would trust the team and the bench of the Knicks a lot more than the Heat, especially in a 7-game series. And for the Lakers, look, I've been doubting the Lakers. I'll be honest. I was wrong. AD so far, when he's been on the court and locked in, has been really playing at a high level.
He does get hurt, though, once a game. There is one moment a game where you're like, up, AD's done for the rest of the postseason.
And it's infuriating. And every time, at least me personally, I'm ready to write this guy off and say, screw him. It's not worth it. He's too injured. It's not worth the headaches that always cause, you know, that he brings along. Then he comes off the bench in the fourth quarter, makes some key defensive stops, get some key rebounds and a basket or two to kind of really help the Lakers in overtime, especially when the game. And LeBron James, I'll be honest, yesterday, I was ready to write him off. I was ready to actually to fire some mean tweets about LeBron. He had a very bad fourth quarter. He had a very poor fourth quarter. He was invisible outside of taking a charge or two against John Morant until he made that impressive layup to tie the game, which was just incredible over Jaren Jackson Jr. How he got that over his hand, I have no idea. How he got it so high off the backboard and to fall in, I have no idea.
When it was released, I'm like, oh, that's going to miss. But I didn't think that was going to go in, and then it did, and it was great. And then also, at the end, makes a defensive play, and I know it didn't count. There wasn't enough time left. But the fact that he made the three-quarters, half-court shot was ridiculous, even though it was like the greatest shot you've ever seen that didn't count. That was wild.
Cool. Yeah, it was absolutely cool. I said he had more than, maybe he took a little bit less time on the other end of the basket, LeBron. Maybe he could have had that game winner right there.
Look at you.
I'm kidding. He was.
You're just a jerk.
No, but he, to his credit, I will give LeBron this.
Oh, this is nice. You're going to give LeBron a compliment, the second greatest player of all time, but go ahead.
It's very impressive when you can play so poorly and then when you need it most, get it.
That's what the great players do.
No, I know. I'm just saying, it's to flip a switch when you have to have a basket, have to have it. Look, when LeBron got the ball, I'll tell you this, I didn't think he was making the basket. I did not have confidence.
And that's why they won the game.
Going to make the shot to give the Lakers or send the game to overtime.
But here's the wild part. Either the Heat or Knicks are going to be in the conference finals. I probably said, yeah. What were you smoking if you would have told me that before the postseason? And if before the postseason you would say that the Lakers are going to the conference finals, not that that's a slam dunk, but there's a chance now of it happening, even you'll admit that, I would have thought you were on something as well. And that's what makes last night so fun, is when most people are thinking in Bucks heat, Giannis is playing, that will get back to 2-2. The other series, I think a lot of people thought that clearly Brooks just screwed that team and they bit off too much that they could chew. And I think a lot of people are rooting for the Lakers in that series. It did not surprise me that the Lakers went up 3-1, but I was surprised with how the Bucks were dominating that game, how they were not able to close that out. But we could be talking about, in more than a few weeks, is how long this postseason goes on, a Heat-Knicks. One of those teams going to the conference finals, depending on the results of that, and the Lakers being the Western Conference Finals, going up against the Suns or the Nuggets. Just wild. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. Kevin Harlan joins us.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
We continue. This is Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. What a wild night it was last night in the NBA playoffs. You had the great performance by Jimmy Butler, 56 points and 9 rebounds as the Heat take a commanding 3-1 lead. And then LeBron James and the Lakers in overtime also take a 3-1 lead as LeBron was magnificent at the age of 38, 117, 111 winners. And now joining us is a great job calling all the games in the postseason. NBA on TNT was on the call for Heat Bucks last night. And that, of course, is Kevin Harlan. Kevin, just what a performance last night, and that's probably an understatement by Jimmy Butler. A day later, how do you kind of put it into perspective?
Hey, Zach, good being on with you. It was phenomenal. You know, fourth highest scoring total for a game in a playoff, and he willed them. No one else was really performing, even like just as a good, you know, wingman. I mean, they didn't get the kind of scoring from Adebayo. Actually, they haven't now for two straight games. No one else is stepping up, and Jimmy Butler had to carry the team. But you expect performances like this from all-stars like him. LeBron showed a little bit of that, certainly in that Laker win late last night in overtime. Morant did that earlier on with his 45-point performance, even though they lost that game to the Lakers out there. But you count on these big-name players to deliver, and for the most part, they are. But Miami is an interesting team, probably not as low as an 8 seed, and that's a little deceiving, I think. But when you take a closer look at the team, they've got 7 undrafted players on there, and that's the most of any team in the playoffs. So they're relying on a lot of no-name players and to kind of fill in the gaps and let Butler and Adebayo and thrive, and certainly Jimmy did that last night. And even with Adetokounmpo, and even with Milwaukee basically at full strength, they couldn't get it done. And Miami's got a 3-1 lead, and we haven't seen many 8 seeds over a 1 seed with this kind of lead this late in the series. It's pretty fascinating to watch.
Now everyone's going to ask the question, can Milwaukee come back from being down 3-1? I know a few years ago in the NBA Finals, they lost the first 2 games and won in 6. As much as I like this Bucks organization and this team, Kevin Harlan, with Jimmy Butler only needing 1 more win and potentially having 3 shots to do so, I just don't see how the Heat are going to lose 3 straight.
Well, you would think that. Miami has kind of defied the odds all season long. Really, since the All-Star break, they've kind of gotten everybody back. They've had some injuries they've dealt with. Significant. Lowry was out for a long time. Robinson was out for a long time. And they're just kind of getting themselves back to what they envisioned. And that has proven to be a pretty successful recipe for them, the way they play. And their coach, Spoelstra, is just he just is terrific at devising different fivesomes on the floor to combat whatever a team as good as Milwaukee may throw at them. Milwaukee had the best record in the NBA. When they've got Giannis, they're a special team. They're not getting much from their point guard, Drew Holiday, right now, and that has hurt them. A couple games in a row now, he has been below his averages, and that's got to be a concern. All in all, though, I would agree with your statement that, you know, for just one more win looming, you would think Butler could come up with at least one more chance to stick a dagger in the Bucks, and it may happen. I don't know if it'll happen tomorrow night. That's going to be a very tough crowd welcoming Giannis back and getting that team back home, but they've got to play again in Miami, and that could be rugged. We do know Miami has won in Milwaukee. They did it game 1, so it can happen. And they split the season series 2 wins apiece. So there's precedent there. Miami's got to be brimming with confidence. And you would think that this could be one of those rare occasions when an 8 beats a 1, and it hasn't happened since 2012 when Philadelphia, led by Coach Doug Collins, and they had actually, I think, Drew Holiday on that team with Andre Iguodala, beat Chicago, and that was the series where, of course, Derrick Rose blew his knee early in the series, and Chicago wasn't the same when Rose was gone.
Kevin Harlan, as a broadcaster, and you're one of the creme de la creme broadcasters in the business, you've seen everything pretty much from LeBron James. He's 38 years old. Last night, 22 points, 20 rebounds, leads him to victory, you know, gets it into overtime and all that. You get set now for this game five on the call. Just what else is there to prepare at this point for you when it comes with LeBron, seeing this guy be number one for so many years?
I think just rest, Zach. You know, he was a 2020 guy last night, oldest player in the history of the NBA to ever put those kind of numbers together at 38 years old and 115 or 116 days, whatever it is. I mean, we've just never seen the likes of him before, put up these kind of numbers and this kind of influence on a team. And it is a team that is following his leadership. And I've always thought that in the playoffs, coaching and individual leadership from players is at its premium. The huddles, the practices, all the film sessions, these players are really delving into the books and watching the tape and listening to everything these coaches are saying. And they are hanging on to every word and every action a player like LeBron James has to offer, much like Butler's offering to Miami. And his influence is so far-reaching and so commanding that I don't know how the Lakers are not going to win this series, even against the great Morant, and Memphis clearly is debilitated. Steven Adams is everything for the Grizzlies. And as great as Bane has been, he struggled the first three games of the series. He had a good 36-point game last night. But they miss Steven Adams. They miss his rim protection. They miss what he does in the lane. They miss his, you know, basic double-double numbers that he puts up with offense and rebounding. And they've not been able to really be the same team without Steven Adams in the middle. So if AD can come in and give them a solid performance, and he wasn't solid last night, but he was good enough, and LeBron is LeBron, this baby could be over tomorrow night, and the 2 seed could fall, and the 7 seed will get ready, the Lakers, for either Sacramento or Golden State. James and his far-reaching ability on the floor and off the floor and commanding this team has almost been unparalleled. Rarely do you see it, but we're lucky enough to see it now.
Kevin Harlan, let's also be real. I thought Dylan Brooks made a massive mistake running his mouth about LeBron, and now he's trying to play the victim card, blaming the media for making him out to be a villain. I just don't get what Dylan Brooks is trying to accomplish here.
Well, and I don't think the team did either. Quite frankly, I think that his words were just the exact kind of fuel that a guy like James is looking for. You know, Michael Jordan famously would look for the slightest knock on his game or on him to motivate him. And LeBron is the same way. You get to that stage in your career, Zach, as you know, these players will look for any little shred of disrespect to take and fuel them. And there's no doubt that James did that. And ironically enough, it was over Brooks, where James tied the game last night with the drive and then eventually won it in overtime with another shot. And even the defensive player of the year, Jaren Jackson, couldn't stop LeBron. But that was all the fuel the Lakers needed. Now they're so locked in. They're a rested team from winning the play-in against Minnesota. And right now they just seem to be one of those teams that could really be on a magical run. And I don't know that Memphis has got enough wherewithal now, unfortunately for the Grizzlies, to get back at them. They're in a deep hole. And it's going to be difficult.
I got two more left for Kevin Harlan before we let you run. That Warriors-Kings series has been phenomenal. Kings had a chance. Warriors let him back in, and then Barnes couldn't hit the shot. Now we'll see what happens with the Aaron Fox for Game 5 coming up tomorrow night. How do you think this Warriors-Kings series is going to wrap up?
Well, Fox's injury is interesting. I did see just as I was getting off the plane a couple minutes ago, Zach, that he says he wants to play. He feels he can play even with the fractured finger, so that will be worth watching. He is an emerging superstar in this league, clearly, and a player that has been difficult for Golden State to stop. You wonder, when you get to this stage of a series, where now 3 games remain, if some of that championship pedigree doesn't take over that confidence. Kings team has not been there for a long time. it as a three seed. We get that. But sometimes there's got to be a little bit extra that pushes you over the top and gives you that kind of confidence. And as a defending champion, the Warriors may have that. But it's going to be a dynamite next three games to watch. I can't wait.
Last one for you, Kevin Harlan. Just got to squeeze in one football point. The Jets are going to be getting Aaron Rodgers. Saw the details of the trade come out yesterday. The draft is coming up this week. You look at the Jets with Rodgers in a loaded AFC. How dangerous do you think the New York Jets could be with Rodgers as their QB?
Well, the good news is that Rodgers will be engaged because I think he feels he's got a lot to prove. And the change of scenery will do him, I think, well. And I'm excited to see how that team, which had a lot of good parts to it and still does and is building even now, has maybe what will be the final piece for a good run. I think that him being engaged is everything. And if he stays healthy and he takes great care of his body, he's going to be a difference maker. So I think we're going to see Aaron Rodgers at the very top of his game. He's only a year removed from being the MVP. He was injured last year. We know that with the broken thumb, they didn't have the kind of people around him that a guy like him deserves. And that was on the Packers, quite frankly. Now there are reports that Rodgers was not engaged and was not necessarily a full participant in a lot of the offseason things that make the quarterback offensive weaponry relationship so important. I think it'll be different this year. I think he's going to come in incredibly motivated. I think that's exactly what he was looking for at this stage of his career. I think he likes the challenge of a new conference, new division, new teammates, but there's a lot of quality around him. And I think he's kind of hanging his hat on that. And I think he's going to come in with a terrific season.
Have a great call tomorrow night, Kevin Harlan. Always appreciate your time.
Zach, always fun talking to you, my friend. Take care.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. Did you see the Colorado spring game from over the weekend, Hickey? Like, last year, you couldn't find anyone in the stands. There's this video from Barstool that they put out. There was, like, more empty seats than there were butts in the seats. And this year, you couldn't find an empty seat, and I'm pretty sure it was in the snow, too. So much for a spring game, by the way.
30 degrees, sold out. 47,000 people.
Now, you study this stuff more than me, but I saw afterwards, just following this stuff on social media, a lot of people now leaving Colorado, too.
Like 25, I think, transfers since Saturday.
That many?
Yes. They have 40. Since he's got there, 46 players have entered the transfer portal, I believe is the latest number.
And I saw that one player had like 100-something, almost 200 receiving yards in the spring game. The next thing you know, he's transferring out.
Out. Deion has pledged things are going to change, and they're changing all right.
But that's crazy. Because you would think like this late in the game, and I know people still making their decisions, but already having the spring game, that you wouldn't have that many people leaving the program.
Well, now it's one of those things where spring ball, you get a chance to see where you are in the depth chart.
Sure.
Coaches kind of tell you the truth or not. And
then
now
your feelings
get
hurt.
The second, you know, transfer portal window opens. So I'm sure he's going to go digging in there and digging big time. The team was also 1-11 last year. So
yeah.
I will say not exactly the craziest thing to try to run as many of those players off that went 1-11. But this is going to be a brand new team.
Now, I've been a big supporter of Deion Sanders getting I know Colorado's not a major job, and we know the importance of the job that he was at, but being a Division I college football coach, and I wanted to see him go to the SEC. Clearly that did not happen. We'll see how long he's at Colorado, and this will go either one or two ways. He has a lot of success at Colorado. The next thing you know, he gets a major job, or it's a disaster. And I don't think this will be a disaster. Let me be clear. I'm a believer, especially now in the NIL era, that we know Deion Sanders is going to be able to recruit. We know he's going to be able to get a lot of talent. But I just can't wait to see what the immediate results are for this upcoming season. I'm looking at their schedule now. They got that TCU game. I know that was up in the air. I see that's listed on the schedule. So you have TCU to kick off the season. You got Nebraska coming to your place with Matt Rhule going to town. Colorado State, you have Oregon, USC, Arizona State, Stanford, UCLA, Oregon State, the Pac-12 schedule, clearly Arizona, Washington State, and Utah. How many wins can you kind of expect? And I know we got to see. It's kind of a tough question to ask, Hickey, but you're Mr. College Football just because the roster's going to look different, and we know his son's a really good player. But I'm just fascinated to see how many wins they're going to get. Like, what do you think? Deion wouldn't answer the question probably the way that you're going to ask this. I'll answer it. But what do you think is a successful season in year one when you take over a one-win program?
Success, I would say 5 wins, 6 wins. You get to 500. Like, I don't know. I'd say right now 3-9 is what I would predict for them to go next year.
And, you know, Deion would not view that as a success.
No. No. But I think there's a lot of questions, a lot of roster turnover. How good is his son? How good is Deion as a coach? I got no idea. I couldn't tell you. We're going to find out.
I'm really rooting for him. I don't know. I get a sense that you think this is going to be a disaster.
I do. Here's my thing. I think he does, personally, too much on the outside instead of coaching. I don't think coaching is a glamour job. I don't think coaching, frankly, is a fun job. I would never want to do it. But there's a reason why, you know, guys like Kirby Smart would all the time. All they do is coach, and recruit. I personally think that Deion Sanders is too obsessed or too distracted by a lot that comes along with coaching, a lot of media stuff, a lot of attention that he gets, instead of being all in on just making everyone better.
But that's what makes Deion Deion, is that he thrives on being the star and the center of attention. And it does make kids, I would think, even though he's older, right? And I know he still has such a powerful name, clearly, but I still think younger kids, and you got to have the money and the NIL and all that stuff to do so, I get that, want to kind of be a part of what Deion is trying to build.
Sure, but if you can't coach, if you can't develop them, if you can't get them to the NFL, I think you're going to learn that out pretty fast.
I'm pretty confident in saying that Deion Sanders knows what it takes to get to the NFL. And just because you know that and you've been a great player doesn't always translate to being a great coach. I don't know what the word that you like to use, the ceiling, is here. And I don't know what to expect for this season. And it's a miserable, miserable job. But if you're Colorado, and I'm not saying that you're saying this, but like, what else are you going to do? How many people do you bring in that just end up don't working there? If I'm Colorado, this is a risk that's worth taking, in my opinion.
I would call it a success already. Honestly.
Yeah, like, look at the spring game.
You were 1-11, and now you're
right.
Spending minutes in April talking about Colorado football.
Probably, because of one man.
First. Right, exactly right. So I don't think it's going to work, but from Colorado's perspective, when you're 1-11, what else are you going to do?
Colorado fans, by the way, you should be thrilled. Get the national championship tickets ready in 2 to 3 years if Hickey's telling you it's not going to work. Because how many times, and Hickey's even laughing when I'm saying this because he knows it's true. Whenever Hickey is so adamant that something is not going to work, I should really just stop doing this on the air. I should just start making bets and fading you whenever you say it's not going to work and you're so defiant and you do one thing. I have now understood your playbook. When you really believe something is not going to work, you kind of like turn your head to the left and you put up a finger to emphasize your point, and you just did that there, and I don't think you realize when you do that.
No, I don't even know what you're talking about, but I guess I'll
have the analytics on you.
Keep an eye out for that the next time. But
there we go. I'm going to hammer the over for Colorado this year. I don't even know what it is.
Charles Barkley guarantee.
Yeah. You can guarantee that Hickey's going to be wrong. Hey, real quickly, I have a poll question out there. Jalen Hurts is the best quarterback in the NFC. Who is the second best QB in the NFC? I want you to guess how our audience is responding to this. 1, 2, 3, and 4. Here are the four options: Dak Prescott, Kirk Cousins, Matthew Stafford, and then other. What do you think the super duper early returns is on the poll question of who is the second best QB in the NFC? What do you think those returns are?
I think Twitter is a here and now sort of place. I think they're going to forget Matthew Stafford and write him off.
Well, let me just say this. Twitter doesn't have a lot of logic, and this is showing this, but go ahead.
I will say Dak Prescott is the leader right now.
Incorrect. He's in second. 24.8% of the vote.
Is other number one?
Yes. The overwhelming majority.
So stupid.
45.3%. Then 16.8% say Matthew Stafford, and who I would probably argue heading into this season is the second best quarterback in the NFC, and I hold my nose when I do so. Kirk Cousins is 13%. And like, who's the other? I think a lot of people just looked at the first three names and they're like, oh, all three of those options are horrible. I'll just press other.
Right.
But you can't tell me it's Derek Carr, even though he's with the Saints now. You're going to tell me it's Brock Purdy? Jared Goff? Geno Smith? Like, come on. And I think all three of those quarterbacks are close. Like, if Stafford was healthy and if that team was good, I think Stafford would be the runaway second place guy here. But I just don't know how healthy he's going to be. And Kirk and Dak are very similar. I know Dak didn't have a good regular season last year. But Kirk and Dak have, like, good regular seasons for the most part, and they're bad in the postseason. I actually think it's Kirk because Kirk's not as injured as Dak gets, and Dak's been injured a lot recently. And I just think Kirk is, out of the three, with the current situation they're in and the health they're in heading into this season, he's the second-best quarterback. But do I have any confidence in any of those three guys to go to Super Bowl this year? No. Because Dak doesn't show up in the big spot, not as Kirk Cousins. And Matthew Stafford, I'd be surprised if he is in the postseason. We'll take a break when we come on back. Bart Winkle and Ryan Horvath will join us to get the Packers side of Aaron Rodgers almost finally saying goodbye to the Green Bay Packers.